Bonjour, je m'appelle Chris Carnot et vous écoutez Feast of Fools Podcast, le meilleur podcast sur l'internet. Easy, so take it slow. You're coming round the bend. You're my good friend, best friend, and you're coming round the bend. You're making friends with the fireflies. I can't say that comes as a surprise, but the things they say are not what they seem. So you've been called to tell us what they mean. Yes, you've been called to tell us what they mean.
Like an old friend that's always there for you, it's the Feast of Fools. On today's show, we're talking in person to the gorgeous, independent, spirited musician, Chris Garneau. Listen as we talk to Chris about his teenage years.
Falling in love again.
Falling out of his friendship with Duncan Sheik.
The sad story behind Baby's Romance.
And his new album in the works just around the corner. This is one of the new songs, Firefly. Stay tuned as Chris Garneau plays us his hits and new songs in the works. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Kyle Curry.
I'm Justin McPhee.
And I'm Chris Garneau.
And he's in the studio playing this song in person.
Beautiful.
Yay, thank you.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
Oh, fine, thank you.
Welcome to Chicago, Illinois, home of fabulousness and broad shoulders.
Yes, thank you so much.
You've been traveling all around this country?
I have been. May and June are traveling around the country and Canada. And now
you know, everybody's gay in Canada.
That's true.
So you traveled from Toronto to Chicago, or where did you come from?
Now I was back home in New York for the past month and a half. We finished tour at the end of June. And so I've just been bumming around New York and a little bit of New Hampshire for recording. And now I'm back on tour for a bit.
Well, Chris, I have a very special treat for you today. I have one of your biggest stalkers in here at the house.
Fan.
I talked to the police about lifting the restraining order so he could actually meet with you face to face. We have here Kyle Curry. Say hello to Kyle Curry.
Kyle.
Hello, Kyle.
Hey, Chris.
Now, you brought something for him, right?
I did. I made him some buttons out of personal ads from Gay Chicago magazine.
Oh, how fabulous. The scant, most sleaziest magazine in the world. It's like, now, which one do you got? You made him three of them?
That's right.
Wow, there's three here. Do I get all three or do I have to pick one?
You can have all three, or you can pick one.
Well, I want one too.
Okay, so yeah, pick one.
Don't hog up the pins.
Pick one and we'll give one to Fausto.
All right. I'll take hot bottom.
Whoa. I'll take hot top. Hey, now
thanks,
you.
I
noticed that you were on a Queerty blog, and you said that you've only fallen in love once, and you never fallen out of love. Is that true, Chris?
Well,
don't lie to me.
Can you tell? Is there a date on that interview?
I don't know. Well, you know, it's like, so you actually got, you guys broke up.
Well, yeah, we broke up quite some time ago. You know, but
everybody who's listening to this right now has big smiles on their faces.
Wait a second!
Right
now. No, I have to clarify. I have to re-clarify. Now, that was my first love. There's a new one.
So you're not available.
Queer tea interview, whenever that was. That's why I was asking for a date.
Oh yeah. No, I just kind of like twirl around the internet and find these things.
Sure,
you know,
sure. Yes. So there's a. You know, so this is number two.
So you fell
two.
In love. This is number two.
Yeah.
And how'd you guys meet each other?
Well, he lives around the corner, so
that's convenient.
The boy next door.
Convenient.
You know, they statistically they say that the true love of your life lives within a quarter mile radius of your home.
Wow.
Did you know that?
Did you just make that up?
No, it's actually a study that's been proven. You can Wikipedia that, and you know, if it's on Wikipedia, it's true.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you are French. Right, Garneau is your
family.
It's
French Canadian, yeah.
You're French Canadian,
yeah, and Irish.
And your family grew up in the East Coast of the United States.
Yeah. You know, my parents were from New England, Vermont, and Massachusetts, and
somebody better turn off their cell phone.
It's
like,
mine's off.
I think it's mine. But, I mean, I know it is.
It's your boyfriend. It's like, what are you doing? So your family is French, and you've actually lived for a while in France.
I did, yeah. When I was younger, my father's work brought us out there for a few years. So I lived there for about three or four years.
And you speak French?
I do.
So you're like the Celine Dion of indie gay music, I guess.
Exactly. That you've nailed it.
Have you ever considered putting out a song like that was in French or something?
Well,
like that?
There is. I have some parts of songs that are in French, and I've yet to write a whole song in French, but I'm sure it'll come soon.
Oh, you know, you could be, if they do sort of like Northern Lights again, you could be part of that.
Sure.
That's a little 80s reference there for you.
I was just going to ask.
So, you have a new album in the works. What's a working title, or do you have a title for it yet?
I do, but I'm not going to say.
Oh.
Sorry.
Are you going to have your photo on the cover this time?
Negative.
No?
No.
Now, wait. You're such an attractive man. You do not take a bad photo. So, why not put your face on the cover?
It just feels uncomfortable to me. It's like, so then it's I truly am the Celine Dion of
But see, doesn't making money make you feel more comfortable? I mean, so it makes you get over it? Or
no, what are you talking about? Money, comfort?
Well, I mean, you want to sell the album, right? And if you have your cute face on it, it's like, you know?
Well, you know, hopefully if everyone does their job, there should be enough press with photos flying around that I don't need to put on the cover of the record.
But do you think that's sort of like an indie musician sort of, you know, is the cost of being beautiful is that if your album has the face on it, it's sort of seen as a vanity project?
Yeah, probably. I mean, kind of, yeah. I don't think it's not very, you know, a respectable thing to do, really, putting your face on the cover of the record.
It's not respectable. Because if I were to put out an album, I would, you know.
You know, I mean, it's about, like, having, you know, the art, too. Like, it's like a package. It's like you're selling your music, you're selling your art. I like combining with other artists to make the front, like, the covers, you know, like a little book.
Hmm. Well, Kyle, do you think that he should have his face on the cover or not?
I think that was a fairly compelling argument, the fact of, you know, CD as an overall art statement, and all of your music seems to be really artistic, so it's nice to have kind of a visual representation of that with artwork on the front.
Who does your artwork?
Thank you, Kyle.
CDs.
Well, my old friend Kirby did the cover for Music for Tourists.
Oh, cool.
And then future things, I'm not exactly sure. I will tell you, though, by the way, that I can tell you the title of the... We're putting out an EP first.
Oh, cool.
Extended... What is an EP?
Extended play, I suppose.
Like one of those big, fat, black things? I mean, like a 12-inch
No, record. It's just a mini... It's just like a half of a record.
But it's
like,
still on a CD.
Correct.
Kind of previews of
album. It's shorter, but it's called Extended Play.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Why would it be extended? It would be a restrained play or something. You know, you should call it a mini album.
Maybe. Well,
I don't know.
We'll
I'm not here to tell you how to run your career. I'm just here to sort of ask about it. So,
sure.
So how are you going about picking the songs for your new album? What is sort of the way you're approaching this?
The main approach is to use the oldest songs that are newly recorded for the EP, and then use the newer ones for the full length.
And so what are they about? Or, I mean, what's the approach?
Well, I mean, it's not really, you know, exactly a concept album. So it just really is a bit all over the place. It still, you know, sort of delves into, you know, real personal life experience and, you know, whatnot. And then, but also it's a bit less on the tragic side.
There is a sort of a tragic overtone to the first album, Music for Tourists. What was the tragedy that is behind that album?
I mean, you know, there's some things that aren't super easy to talk about publicly, but I guess, you know, when I started writing most of Tourists, I was, you know, 19, 20, 21. It was like the last, you know, all the songs are that old at this point. So
how old are you now?
I'm 24.
Wow.
So, you know, it's...
But what was the tragedy that is behind the album? I mean, did somebody die close to you die? Or
Well, yeah, that's one. A good friend of mine from high school died a few years ago from a heroin overdose. Just after she has twins as well. And they were just terrible. Like one or two when she died. And, you know, I had been drinking and drugging a bit, you know, more than you should. Ended up in the hospital a few too many times.
Wow.
And So I was trying to sort of, you know, step away from that a bit. And, you know, I mean, I still drink, don't get me wrong, but...
I know, I saw you at the Alt-Q Music Festival. I was holding you up. I was like...
No, but I mean...
that bad, was it?
No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, is that, you know, is that sort of like sort of a cross that a lot of musicians bear? Is that to struggle with alcohol and substance abuse? I mean, there's other musicians that, you know, we can't... with too numerous to mention on the show... Sure. That have sort of had their personal challenges with a crystal meth, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. I mean, I suppose it's very common. I think it's just common, you know, among artists of any sort, really.
And why is that, though?
You know, I don't know. I mean, what do you, you know? I guess it's just, you know.
I mean, are artists in Africa or Europe like? Is it part of being an American artist? Is that you're, you know, you have this low self esteem and you have to sort of.
I think it's universal. I don't think it's just. No. It might be a little bit more prevalent here, but I do think it's universal.
So why do artists suffer? Why are they in pain? I mean, what, you know, is that sort of that what attracts us to being artists?
I don't know. I suppose it sort of is something that starts developing. You know, at a young age, you start feeling different or crazy or, you know, angry or, you know, depressed or whatever, or, you know, or some terrible shit happens to you when you're... Am I allowed to swear on the show?
Sure. Yeah, you can cuss all you want. Fuck, damn it. God damn it.
You know, whatever goes down when you're in your younger years makes up, you know, who you are. And I guess if you start making art, then that just sort of seeps through.
So, I mean, is there like a humor to... Because I think that when I saw you performing at the Alt-Q Music Festival this past spring at the Old Town School of Folk Music, there seemed to be sort of a parody aspect to what you were doing, because it took itself so emotionally intensely serious that you know, it was like, are you really emo or are you pretending to be emo?
Neither. I mean, I'm not pretending to be emo. I mean, it's
'cause the emotions are really raw and very intense. And at a certain point, like when you sang the song, the Island song, mm-hmm. the audience sort of like had a cathartic laughter to the lyrics. Do you remember that?
No,
yeah. People when you said, I live in a little island in the, how does it go?
In the middle of town. Yeah.
In the middle of town.
Yeah.
And then the audience, when they heard those lyrics, it was like there was this like chuckle and stuff, and it was probably because like
identify the lesbians.
Oh yeah, yeah, lesbians. What does that
mean exactly, that you live in an island?
You know, it's sort of. I remember when I wrote it, I was in my house in Brooklyn, and I was I have three windows that look out like onto the main road, and out you can kind of see Manhattan from my windows too. And I just remember feeling like very, despite, you know, being surrounded by millions of people, you know, I just despite that, feeling very isolated and very alone, and that's it. I mean, it's as simple as it sounds.
How little you can, I don't know, talk to people and still be surrounded by them. I
mean, that's true. Yeah.
I don't know. I barely ever like talk to anyone besides, you know, unless I go out to do it. But I pass 1,000 people a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris, let's hear that song, the Island song. Can you play that for us?
Sure. And oh, the rage is gone. And oh, the sorries begin. And though the drinking has thinned, oh, still I wrestle within. And then to you, I don't look so good, like I did what I felt like I did what I would. But I don't have my dog, and I don't make a sound. I live on an island in the middle of town. So if you've got a thing with me or my friend, remember what we've been through. Remember where we've been. We don't have our dog.
don't make a sound. We live on an island in the middle of town. And oh, the rage is gone. And oh, the stories begin. And oh, the drinking has thinned. Oh, still I wrestle within. And then to you, I don't look so good, like I did what I felt like I did what I would. But I don't have my dog, and I don't make a sound. I live on an island in the middle of town. Don't have my dog, and I don't make a sound. I live on an island in the middle of town.
That's fantastic. Chills. I know. Chills. You're so beautiful. Wow. It's like, what? Are you sure you don't want to put your face on the cover? That is such a touching song.
You were saying that you've kind of moved past the tragedy some, and the lyrics of that kind of speak to that the drinking is thinned, but you're still wrestling. So what would you define the mood of this album? What do you want it to be? Is it going to be kind of a joyous album, or what's the ratio of tragic to happy songs on it?
I think that the ratio is still in favor of tragedy.
Good.
Because nobody likes a happy artist.
Not good for like, yay, you're tragic and sad all
love.
The time.
I mean, otherwise it would be Katrina and the Waves.
Is that the girl who walked on sunshine? Or?
Yeah, I'm okay. Walking on sunshine.
Right.
I don't know. I guess the other thing is like writing... changing sort of the mood, or you can do, I guess that what I'm trying to do is more with the movement and beats and rhythms of the songs, and keeping them maybe a little higher energy. It's a lot different. This album is there's a lot more percussion. There's, you know, faster songs.
There's a wonderful quality to your music, is that it stands. I mean, right now we are talking to Chris Garneau, and he's in our home, and he's playing this without any sort of you're unplugged, so to speak, which is that there's no orchestration. It's just you and a keyboard and your voice, and that you stand alone so strongly. I mean, that's something really that speaks to it, to me at least. And I'm wondering, has there that been sort of a tension with the record label or the people that are producing your music, is some people may want to see you to be very unfiltered, sort of just you and the keyboard, and other people want to have an orchestrated sound. How does that play out?
I guess it plays out. I mean, when it comes to touring and playing live and you know, performing is when it really starts getting thought about. We have, you know, I personally... I'm happy to play alone. And this next stretch of tour, I'm doing all alone. But
it's lonely to do that too. Though.
Sure, I prefer having the band. You know, there's a lot about having the band that is more exciting and does draw a different audience than just the kind of people that go to see singer songwriters. And I like to incorporate. The band and have us play a bunch of songs together, but at every show I'll still play a few songs alone, you know. So I like to sort of give what, you know, would hopefully be the best of both worlds.
Well, we want to do a big shout out to Saul, your roommate / band member.
Sure.
Who I also kind of love.
Yeah.
Kyle, do you have a crush on him too?
Maybe a little bit.
A little bit.
Everybody has a crush on Saul.
He's adorable.
Well, I mean, is he gay, first of all?
No.
Are you going to out him on the show?
He's straight.
But I mean, you're gay, right? I think so.
What?
Are you
talking about?
I mean, and you were roommates with the guy, and he's really cute. Was there ever, like, did you ever, like, sort of fancy him?
I think when I met him like in high school. He's with my like one of my best friends, Jenny. They've been together for years.
The cellist.
No.
No. Okay. No,
that's but Eleanor. Confusing.
Is Jenny the Jenny O?
Jenny O. Yeah.
Oh, love her too.
Yeah. She's she and I have been friends forever, and she and him have been dating since the beginning of college. So. I know, like, when I used to go visit her at college, like, the first time I met him, like, you know, he's hot. You have a crush on him, but...
So you did want to be boyfriends with him.
I didn't want to be his boyfriend. I've never
wanted
to
be his boyfriend. And then you became roommates, and then you became bandmates, and your boyfriend is not jealous.
No.
He's cool with that. Because if I was, you know, if I was in a similar situation, I know Mark Phelan, my partner, he would be livid, you know, because they're, you know... it's natural, right?
No? So no, not anymore. It's like there's not even a like this much.
He's like your brother now.
Yeah, it's that would be
that you happen to share the same bed and sleep naked together.
Right. Apart from that, he's my brother.
And collaborate music. So I mean, is this next album or some of the songs? Is he how much of a impact does he have on the music?
A huge impact. He and I are producing it together, so it's a joint effort.
Are you guys recording out of the home studio, or are you going into a professional studio?
Well, we recorded for about a total of 2 months up in New Hampshire in the mountains, nice. Like at this family home that we converted.
How nice!
Shut it.
Sucks to be you. That's nice.
So we were there last fall for about a month and a half, and then we just went up last week for a couple weeks.
Drink some wine, play a little music, drink some more wine.
That's right.
Sit by the fire.
Sit in the jacuzzi.
Yeah, and there's a lake, and it's nice. Really beautiful.
Wow. Can I come and help you? I can play the tambourine.
Yeah, we need a tambourine player.
I have a tambourine here, so but hold on. Ask him a question.
Can you play tambourine on Fireflies later?
I can play the harmonica, kind of.
Yeah, I can play the maracas.
I'm good at those.
Okay, Kyle, ask him a question. Well, you're killing me here.
So. Oh, sorry. So you're going to Europe after this, right?
Correct.
Have you toured Europe before?
I was there last winter, February or March, for just about a week or two, and I played like just three shows. I played London, Paris, and Berlin.
So what is the reaction very different between here in the States and in Europe? Is it a different kind of crowd?
It is. Yeah, the crowd, the three shows that I played there last winter were very different than any show I've played in America.
What's the difference? How?
I guess the best example is like the Berlin show was in someone's home. This woman, Melissa, threw this party and invited a bunch of people
but
and
her
friends.
Home, it means mansion.
It's sort of, yeah. And I mean, sweet. You know, and you don't need much money to have a mansion in Berlin either. So she did
oh,
have
she
a
she was
big,
one of those squatters that took over the
a previous squatter that ended up owning. Yeah.
Really? Is
yeah,
this true?
She's been there for like 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's the way you got to get property, people. Exactly. Is you move into
she's
it when they're
Chicago.
Not there.
Oh,
she's
really?
From Chicago. She yeah. knows how to do it.
Shout out.
So, shout out to Chi-Town's expatriates. So you played in the woman's house in Berlin.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of surreal because I just can't really imagine that happening here. She just invited all these friends and acquaintances, and you know, people were drinking and having fun, and an hour or two went by, and then everyone actually sat down on the floor and you know, very attentively and very kindly listened to a whole set of mine
and why
and
wouldn't they
ask questions like, and
they'd be on their knees.
I mean, it was just a really you know magical sort of evening that I've
Kyle
never experienced anywhere else.
You do?
I do loft concerts.
Yeah,
which the next time you're in Chicago, if you'd like to play
sure.
one, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I do shows too. Will you put
donkey shows don't come?
You're like you come into the house and like there's nobody here except you and me. It's a very small audience, but a very enthusiastic one.
So is, you're unfortunately in love and committed in your relationship. But so when you go on these long tours, like over to Europe, is that difficult to maintain that when you're meeting all kinds of new people and you're apart for so long?
It's not. I mean, I just always really miss him and want to, you know, come home. And
aww.
It's also like, I mean,
what's your boyfriend's name? Let's do it. Shout out to him.
His name's Grant.
Grant, what's his MySpace page?
It's
is he on yours?
It's Mission Fantastic. He takes pictures and makes films.
Cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And so any are you guys like gonna? So is he taking your photos for the next album and collaborating anyway?
We're actually doing a shoot next week that he's using for a few different things. One of them's a Blender issue. I think it's a magazine in Holland.
Oh, because I heard Blender and I got nervous.
We're using a Blender.
I don't know, but it's like, it sounded scary.
No. So we may end up using some of that for press or something. I don't know.
That's fantastic. How did the, now the famous photo of you inside the, what was it that you're underneath the Brooklyn Bridge and you're holding a water pistol.
Yeah.
what's going on there? Are you trying to like, be a terrorist or something? Or like, what's going on?
Of course.
With sexy results.
NSA is listening.
Well, because you're all wet. You're sort of wearing a parka and you're in the...
fishing waders.
A fishing waders, yeah. And what was the purpose or meaning or story behind that?
It was very unplanned. Just my good friend Sam Bassett, who is a photographer, likes to just sort of, we just meet in the morning and he has a costume closet and we like go through it and pull out whatever, you know, seems right for that 10 minutes and then
but see
go
that's not fair, Chris, because you're like those international male models. Any ridiculous outfit looks good on you. You know, so
know
like if
that.
I it's like if I put that on, I just look like some homeless person that wandered into the lake, the river, whereas with you it's like edgy and cute and sweet. You know, I mean, what was, so you were sort of holding that water pistol? It was your friend's idea, the photographer?
Yeah, we actually went then, well, after we found the fishing waders and the poncho, we went to Kmart and got the gun, the water pistol, or water rifle, whatever.
Did you actually go?
Acid.
Did you go in the water?
I did.
I mean,
which isn't good.
You're not really tall. Was there like fear of drowning?
Well, no. I mean, the
how,
right
deep,
there,
how deep did you go in?
There, I guess I was about up to my shoulders almost.
It looks like you were way far. Like
yeah, this, the current's going to tear. You know,
well,
take you
it's
away.
About a mile and a half wide, the East River. So I was probably maybe about 20 feet out. The current is quite strong in the center, though. But I didn't get nearly that far.
This is a little bit of an optical illusion, then.
Yeah. The year before, I had gone swimming, just actually swimming in the East River, and I got like violently ill, like for about 3 weeks. I had a really terrible flu. So this time when we did that shoot, I didn't go past my shoulders because I didn't want to inhale any water.
Now, Chris, you, I want to know which came first. Telling your family you wanted to be in musicals or that you were gay?
Isn't it just simultaneous?
Yes, I mean, when you said I want to be, in Spring Awakening, they were like, oh, sweetie, we understand.
That, you know, the musical theater business started very early. I was like 11 or 10 or 11. You know,
I would have loved to have been in musicals when I was a teenager. No, unfortunately, I'm from Puerto Rico. So I'm, you know, we could not afford such things.
Do they not have musical theater?
I had Maraca. I was in musical and stuff, but you got involved in musicals. Which musicals did you do when you were a teenager? Can you embarrass yourself here? Did you do Pippin?
No,
please,
I mean,
sir, can I have some
almost
more?
I mean, just let's see what other normal ones like The King and I.
You did The King and I.
Yep.
You played one of the kids.
No, I was the prince.
Oh,
you crazy.
I don't know.
I was in high school. That was a high school musical.
Okay, so everybody was young.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then what else were you in? The Wiz? Were you in The Wiz?
I was in just regular Wizard of Oz.
Oh, what'd you play?
I was the Cowardly Lion.
Ooh, I was Nico the Flying Monkey Leader.
Oh, cool. That's really cool.
It's very exciting.
Okay. I'm holding restraint here, just... Okay, what other musicals were you in?
I was in the do you know the Radio City Christmas Spectacular?
Yes.
Starring the Rockettes, the world famous Rockettes.
Yeah, I know somebody who's in that all the time.
As a Rockette?
No, as one of the dwarfs.
Oh, who?
I can't. Well, I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he wants people to know that. But on the air. But so yeah, he's a boyfriend of a friend of mine, and he makes so much money from that he doesn't have to work for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's... They probably...
What really did you play in Radio City Musical Christmas Spectacular?
I was numerous different roles, you know, because it's like a... Come it's on. A show of... It's a show of...
So you're
of
fairly every, versatile.
They try yeah. to
You were not a Rockette? What were you? Either are a Rockette?
I was like a wooden... You know, a wooden baby soldier.
Jesus. You were a wooden soldier.
I was, you know, in the Christmas... They do like a Christmas Carol run through, like a you know, like a 5-minute version of the Christmas Carol. They really jam it in.
I think it's sort of interesting that so many Jewish people enjoy that show. Don't sure. you think so? I mean, yeah. as a Gentile-y oriented show, that it would appeal to Jewish people.
Yeah, I guess it's just the you know New York entertainment.
Well, Christmas is the holiday where people from all religions come together to worship Jesus.
They even
Christ.
Do a nativity scene at the end.
You did?
Every year they do a very that's actually the lengthiest scene. It's about a 40-minute nativity scene. It's really really awful.
And what did you play in the nativity
you
scene?
Just freeze you just are frozen
but were you like an animal or oh a human or?
A shepherd or something, you know, I don't know a lamb.
You were
or
so
a rock.
Stoned you didn't mine. Even know where you were.
And I wasn't stoned yet. I was only 12, so I wasn't quite
so
there
cute.
Yet
So now you decided to audition for Spring Awakening, which is Duncan Sheik's sort of a fierce. Okay, talk about what Spring Awakening is for people who are not familiar with it, like myself.
It is it's a play that was written in the 1890s in Germany by Frank Wedekind, and it was just, you know, a tragedy. It was about sexual awakening, youth, you know, puberty and suicide and sex, and you know, it was very kind of a crazy thing to have written at the time.
But it's very German.
Sure, yeah.
Typical of German literature.
And, you know, and then they transformed it into this big dancing, you know, flashy Broadway musical. So, whatever.
Which sort of fitting with your own sensibilities, I guess, right? Sort of.
I guess so. I mean, honestly, I'm not involved with the project anymore for many reasons. And
there's a terrible restraining really order between you and Duncan Sheik.
Just about. and so.
No, but I mean, you guys stayed friends, and he actually produced the music for Tourist, right? Or.
Well, he was yes, but he was. He had started that before the actual, you know, Broadway production began. So I was doing workshops of it back in high school when I was, you know, 18 years old. And then after that, they sort of took a break for a few years, and then it just kind of they kind of rehashed old directors and Duncan and whoever, you know, this and that, and they got it produced and it went to Broadway. But we had already started working on the record.
You guys are still, like, I know that at South by Southwest you played together, right?
Yeah, we did.
Which is a music and arts festival in Austin, Texas.
Right. Yeah, we're not speaking right now, so.
You're not?
We're not, no.
Are you barely breathing?
What?
It's Duncan Sheik's single.
Oh. Yeah. No, but I mean, what happened between the... is there a falling out, or is it a public...
Some shit went down. I guess... I don't know, you know, when it starts, when you start getting sharky about money, but I guess it happens to a person. There's like a line that you... I don't know. So...
Because he was wanting money from you? Or?
And it's just sort of at this beginning process where, you know, I don't have any money. So I'm just like, just put out, you know, a record on a very small label. And, you know, I'm just sort of getting by and doing what I can.
He's not hurting financially.
He sure is not.
So it's kind of, well.
So there's been a bit of a war that's broken out. But
Have there been a temptation for you, since you've had a lot of success as an independent musician, to sort of see yourself wanting to become a signed artist on a major label?
Has there been, I'm sorry, has there been
a desire, or is that sort of like, do musicians just see that as a bad decision at this point in time?
It's a good decision for some artists. I don't think it's necessary for me. I don't want to be on a major label, and I don't think that I would need to be in order to sort of circulate musically. And, you know, things are picking up. And I mean, the other thing is, you don't really, you know, I mean, royalties these days are like, you know, nobody buys records anymore. Nobody really goes to the store. You know,
well, they buy them on iTunes. Well,
yeah, know. But it's not like it used to be. And
you make your money in concert sales.
Yeah, touring and licensing, yeah. Film and television. So, you know, that's where the money is. I don't need to, you know, be on whatever big label just to try to do that whole thing. It's not necessary.
How do you feel the majority of your fans find your music then? Where are they first exposed to it?
That's a great question. I never know because the fan base is so ranges from such different kinds of people and different, you know, age people, and you know, shows are filled with such weird mixes of people that I honestly, it's just, I guess it's clearly from such different publications, from, you know, queer publications to indie blogs to MySpace to, you know, it's just, it's word of mouth. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place.
So we have some questions here from our listeners. Feast of Fools, the number four, the letter U through AOL Instant Messenger and the Yahoo Messenger. But before we go into those questions, why don't we hear a little bit of Baby's Romance?
All right.
Baby sleeping in the crib on top. The baby sleeping above you. You will lift him to the parking lot. Your car is waiting there for you. Your car is waiting there for you. I would like to see a little more propriety. Cooperate with me and answer me without a plea. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you. Whiskey's waiting on the fire top. The baby's going to drink too. The lady's got no clue she's at the shop. But if she knew, then she'd kill you. The bugs are out cause they come out at night. Usually they just bite our hands. Cause normally we have clothes on without a fight. But now fighting's a part of baby's romance. But now fighting's a part of baby's romance. I would like to see a little more propriety. Cooperate with me and answer me without a plea. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you. I know now. I'm never gonna tell on you.
Great song. Oh, I'm on tears here.
I'm the luckiest Chris Garneau fan in the world right now. Everyone else is jealous of me.
Hold on, I gotta cry now.
Oh no.
That song is so sad, yeah. Chris. It's like, what? Who are you not gonna tell on?
Excuse me.
Sad to hear that song, and it makes me like, I wanna just like cry right now, but it's like, what?
Well, I guess, you know, the important
people
thing.
People are crying here.
Oh, like, God. Sorry, guys.
It's such a sad, beautifully sad song. Who are you not going to tell on? What was the secret that you were going to keep? I guess, can you
tell us.
Well, it's already been, the person's already been told on. So that's an older song as well. And there's been some recent developments, but,
are we going to get Baby's Romance, the sequel part two?
Yeah,
Baby's breakup. No, but what is the, can you tell us the story behind that?
Yeah. I mean, briefly, I can sort of just try to wrap it up. It's there was I you know there was a legal case, you know, that I was involved in, and
there was a lawsuit against you.
Yeah, no. I it was on my, you know, own accord. You know, there was you know, abuse as a child done to me, and it was me. So when the song was written, I had not yet taken any.
Action against action. The person who
right. had, but I since then have.
Wow. And so did you, what went through your mind when you made that decision to take action?
It was solely based on it really had nothing to do with me anymore. It was I felt like I had a responsibility for other younger, you know, children that were in harm or potentially in harm. So it was just I didn't feel like I had a choice anymore. I felt like I actually had to
do something. A family relative who just recently came forward talking about one of our siblings actually who molested her, and it was just, and I think that when that happens, is like there's two reactions. There's anger, but also that there's also disbelief that mm-hmm. somebody could do something take advantage of people's trust, mm-hmm. and especially a child's trust. Mm-hmm. I mean, how was your family reacting to that?
You know, they were some family that were sort of that I had grown up with that were in my, you know, precise generation within 4 or 5 years sort of had some, you know, ideas or maybe, you know, had sort of come in contact with it themselves. So some people weren't totally shocked. But, you know, other, you know, my parents and my, you know, immediate family, my siblings and then my, you know, my extended family, we're all, you know, it was sort of, a big wow. ordeal for sure. Yeah.
Was it hard for you to come out as gay having been, a molestation survivor?
No, I've never really had, any trouble, with those. Those have always been separate issues with me, so there's never been any correlation. It's just been that's over here and this is over there. Like it's
well, you know, more power to you. You know, and it's like I'm glad that you've been able to survive this and make some beautiful music as a result of something so terrible that happened to you in your life.
Yeah.
So we have some questions here from our listeners.
Uh-oh.
This one is comes from Jonathan Chiang Mai. I'm not sorry I pronounced it. It's in Thailand. Do you have a specific location where you write your songs or any strange places?
That's a good question. I do most of the actual writing full out, you know, with instruments around me in my house because I don't play guitar, so I don't have any crazy places I can go deep into the woods or.
So you like having to drag this piano right. around?
Goddamn fucking piano, just to have a magical spot.
What'd you say, Justin?
Would there be a place that you would want to? I mean, that, aside from your living room or whatever.
You know, I don't know. I haven't even thought about it really.
Yeah,
you can bring
up the laptop and a little portable keyboard and be like sure. grooving in the. Well, the best thing was that you're up in the New Hampshire forest,
right?
And,
yeah, I've done
the jacuzzi,
a lot of
the roommate, the very like handsome the roommate
that you've made.
And the wine.
Yes, that,
and the
that
long
jacuzzi.
Massages.
You know, it's right. a log cabin,
relaxing you. Okay, so here's another question from Miguel in the Midwest. What was the Well, we already asked him about the Brooklyn Water Bridge photo. He wants to know if are you going to do a similar photo for the next album? I guess I don't know quite what he means by that, but I would assume it's
maybe his press photos are.
Yeah,
using...
are you doing a sort of? Are you like Madonna? Going to reinvent yourself every time? And by reinvent meaning, you know, changing your haircut and putting on a new wig or something.
I guess I'm more like Celine Dion. I'm just not ever going to reinvent myself. I'm just going to be like a steady.
You'll just be really difficult all the time.
So you can keep those extensions on.
And put out CDs that crash your computer.
Yes, exactly.
Just like Celine Dion.
Okay,
here's another one from Pup Don. You have a similar style to Stina Nordenstam.
Stina.
Would you say she's an inspiration for you?
Do
you know who that is?
Embarrassingly enough, I don't. I know the
name. I don't either,
I know because I can see it. You know, the letters. I've definitely seen that name. I don't know her music though.
And Charlie's Kama asked, big props. I had to ask a question. What was your inspiration for the song Relief? Which is sort of your hit song from the from your first album.
Yeah, the single.
Well, the single. And with that, with that video kidding. That was actually a documentary of your life, what, following you through your job as a worker in a restaurant?
Or sure, yeah, that's
as a
true.
Waiter?
Yeah. I guess, you know, lyrically, I actually co-wrote those lyrics with my old boyfriend, and he that was sort of the first song that I wrote that I still play these days. And I think people tend to think it's a sad song, or that it's, you know, tragic just because of, you know, musically it's sort of, you know, minor and a bit, you know, eerie, but it's sort of about having jealousy and then being with someone and letting that go and being happy. And it's called Relief. I mean, it's about, you know, falling in love and being in love and trusting that person.
It's got one of the most romantic lyrics, in my opinion, that I've ever heard. The one about, I didn't come to see the city. I came to see it around you, basically. Like, what a great sentiment. I want someone to do that to me. Face of Fools listeners, since Chris is unavailable.
Yes, but you know, everybody's everybody has their price, even Chris does. You're so cute. It's like,
okay, so here's Enzo Schulz asked, do you package your music for a particular audience or a group of people? Who's your audience? Who do you see as your audience?
You know, and Kyle and I were just talking about this a second ago, a little bit, but it's, there's no specific, group. There's really not,
but so do you see yourself as a gay artist or an artist that happens to be gay?
The latter. Yeah. You know,
but isn't that like what everybody does? I mean, find me one person who says they're the gay artist, you know?
Okay.
Maybe like RuPaul. I mean, it's like, you know, it's sort of like young people on MySpace. This is the pet peeve, is that they say they don't want to define themselves by their sexuality. But if you're open and honest, you can't avoid but define making your sexuality a defining aspect for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
if it's your only aspect, then it sucks, but...
Yeah, it's hard. You know, you start... Because when we started doing press and stuff for this first record, you know, that was sort of the big question was, do you want this to be public knowledge or not?
And so your record label asked you, do you want to be in the closet like Duncan Sheik or be out of the closet?
Yeah, everyone does think Duncan's gay, don't they?
Don't they? I wonder why. Anyways, or are you going to be out of the closet like, you know, Nina Simone?
Yeah, no, I mean, so...
As a black woman.
Right. And my response was just that I don't want to hide, you know, from anyone about it.
Hide something like that? I mean, it's like,
well, you could just, you know, choose to not answer questions when it comes down to, you know.
Well, let's pretend like if you were going to be in the closet and I'm interviewing you. Okay, Chris Garneau, you're so attractive. Are you gay?
See, I can't. I suck. Know. I can't hear. No, that's silly.
You could say I'm an omnisexual. I mean, what do you think about someone like Merv Griffin, who recently passed away? Who, you know, he said he was a quatrosexual. He'll have sex with anyone for anything for a quarter. I mean, it's like, and he was somebody who was gay, and he was like, felt himself very limited. He was a very powerful man in the music and entertainment industry. And yet at the same time, he felt like he couldn't reveal that aspect of himself.
I don't know. I mean, I personally, it's just been, it's gotten a bit more out of, I feel like attention is drawn to it, unnecessarily, because it really has very little to do with why I make music, or it really has nothing to do with why I make music at all. And
except that you wrote a song with your boyfriend, wasn't a lady, you know. So it would have been like, "Hey, girl," because I noticed that a lot of gay musicians, they don't say, you know, "I felt his cock on my back of my throat," you know, something like that. Like, they don't ever say that.
I want that song to exist, though.
we could come up with
Fossil's album's gonna happen.
But I mean, is that something like consciously you stay away from as a songwriter? It's like, I don't want to sort of like be as graphic and talk about the gender and gay experience in my music?
Yeah, although just I will say this, because there is, you know, there is this one song, the other song on the record that I co-wrote with Mike, which is Saturday, which does have the lyric, you know, if I don't black out, I'll keep you inside me. So, you know, that's fairly graphic and to the point.
Wait, say that again to me. If I don't black out.
But slower and more sexy.
This isn't a song, or?
It's in a song on Tourists. It's if I don't black out, I will keep you inside me. That's the
Are you
lyric.
Talking
That's
about anal penetration?
What?
Wow. That's incredible.
No.
You know, crazy. Chris, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're such a gifted and beautiful and passionate, soulful person. And I just think the world is a better place because you're in it.
Well,
making
you.
Music, you know.
Thank
but
you
now
so
you might regret coming on the show. Breakdown 2007. And
no one
questions.
Send this to Duncan.
Yeah, do not send this to Duncan Sheik. This interview never existed. Duncan Sheik is not gay. He's a heterosexual man. Breakdown 2007. Yeah. Can you give me a little Breakdown 2007 theme music? Because we're actually taping this live. So give me like 3 power chords.
That was just what
you
were just singing.
Can you sing it, though? Sing it.
Oh, jeez.
Come on,
really...
do it for me.
2007.
Oh, come on. You crazy?
Breakdown 2007.
Breakdown 2007. Breakdown 2007.
Breakdown 2007.
With
Breakdown 2007.
With Chris Garneau.
Yes.
Okay. What's your favorite color?
This 20 cards. Here we
yes.
go.
Yes. Answer it, goddammit.
Gray.
What's your favorite food?
Steak.
Describe yourself as a fancy shade of paint.
Carolina green.
Ooh,
oh, that's beautiful.
When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A veterinarian, but I was copying my brother, and then it was an actor, you know, or musician. You know, it was like it's kind of.
Oh, and your childhood dreams came true.
Oh.
To be a musician. What is the name and species of your favorite childhood pet?
Rascal dog, mini schnauzer. He's a real little baby.
What's the biggest misconception people have about you?
God.
that you're shy?
That you know of.
I don't know.
That you're a bottom?
He took the I'm a top button.
Top button too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
then I took I'm a dirty bottom, though.
That's true.
So,
yeah. I'm a dirty bottom.
What is the biggest misconception? What do people think about you? What?
Sorry, I was passing on the last one.
So you're going to pass on that?
On misconception. Sorry, I can't. Okay,
what's your best feature of your body?
Oh, Lord. People tend to like my ass, but I think it, you know.
Really?
That's what, you know, people are always
I have
like,
to take a look at
booty,
it later on.
You know?
I'm not going to post a picture of that.
I supposedly have like a girl's ass or something. And people,
you have a really nice ass, actually. I wish I had your ass. But I think it's your eyes.
I think it'd be a little smaller. Thanks.
That's my answer, but, you know. So if you could change one thing... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What turns you on?
What turns me on sexually?
Yeah,
sure.
So all the potential list, you know, people you might have sex with in the future
can
know what to do. Yeah, so I don't have to actually.
Besides the jacuzzis and, you know, red wine, you know, there's
that
not
turns
much.
Me on. We're so compatible.
And salts, you know,
salts,
you know,
Epsom salts. You mean or like bath salts?
Bath salts
or smelling salts.
That's
kind of kinky.
Strictly smelling salts. That's it. That's the only thing that does it for me.
If you could change
days.
One thing about yourself, what would it be?
Probably to sweat less. I really sweat.
You
me
were
too.
Shaking
oh
when
God.
I was taking a picture with me. Why are you afraid of me? I have nothing.
What
I was
are
like,
you talking
I'm the
about?
One who should be afraid of you.
What are you talking about?
When
why
I had
am
my arm
shaking?
Around you, you were like trembling a little bit.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'd need a drink or something.
I can arrange that.
What is the best thing that happened to you recently?
This is going to just sound silly, but just yesterday, I just sold a song to Grey's Anatomy. That was
oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Chop, chop.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing that's happened to you recently?
There have been. The worst thing. You know, I don't know. I feel like they're all too silly to talk about.
Tell us a silly thing.
A silly bad thing. You know, van getting broken into. That's a silly bad thing.
That sucks.
Okay. Well, do you have any financial advice? Like, what stocks should we be investing in, or how should we manage our stock portfolio?
Excuse me?
What financial advice do you have for our listeners?
Financial advice?
Don't do business with taking on the cheek.
I'm in debt. I don't have any financial advice.
Don't be in debt? Is that a good one?
What would you like to see Oprah doing in 5 years?
Producing a new Chris Garneau musical.
Thank you. Good answer. If you could travel back in time and meet anybody, who would it be?
I'd really like to meet Aubrey Beardsley.
Okay.
I would have liked to.
I don't know.
I have no. Who is
we
that?
Suck.
He is a artist from London, and he worked in London and Paris in the turn of the century. And he actually, I have a tattoo that he.
And you have his name. Oh, and wow. Wow.
He did like really creepy. This is one of his grotesques, but he also did. He was gay, and he did all these really crazy like giant penis drawings, and they're all like black ink and very beautiful and crazy looking.
Just good like answer. You.
What makes you mad?
Shallow things like traffic and airport workers and the president and
if your vagina could write its own monologue, what would it say?
She would say did you write this question yourself? You asked this?
We asked this to every single person.
Like, what did Kathy Griffin say?
She said, actually, we didn't ask Kathy Griffin that. We asked George Takei.
Why did you not ask Kathy Griffin?
Because we hadn't had that question in the
time. My vagina would say, why did you not ask Kathy Griffin?
The same question. what would your vagina? No. I want to hear your, what is the goddess inside
monologue?
You say?
Yeah.
What does your vagina monologue say? What is the inner goddess inside you?
Say?
It's a short answer, so, you know.
It's a short answer?
Yeah.
Oh. I see what you're saying. I don't know. This is hard. You're really getting me here.
I know.
That could be what your vagina says. So this is hard. You're really getting me here. Double entendre.
Yes. This is hard.
You're really, really getting me here.
What are you addicted to?
Alcohol, nicotine. That's about it right now.
Yeah. Caffeine. Good. So you beat the jazz.
Good.
Yeah.
You know what jazz is, right?
Nope.
The Ding Dong Town?
No, jazz is what they used to refer to as heroin back in the days.
Oh, yeah. I never was really addicted to heroin.
Well, what can I ask you what you were hospitalized for?
A heroin overdose.
But
I wasn't really... I mean, okay, maybe I had like a little brief...
Do you have track marks?
No, I never shot it.
Oh, you just swallowed it?
No.
Oh, blew it. Oh, yeah. I was like, ooh.
Does that mean no?
Okay, what musical instruments do you play besides the piano, obviously?
I'm a slightly musically confined to the keyboard instruments. So I've been tooling around with the melodica, which is the one with the tube, the little keyboard with the tube that you blow into.
I love those.
Yeah, it's cute. I'll play it tomorrow. And the harmonium, I love that, you know, the pump organ.
That's what the Indians use to, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. Okay, what's for dinner?
That's a great question. I don't know. Vodka soda, probably.
And what happens when we die?
I'm struggling with that. You know, I think we're gonna have a lot of fun, though. I think it's like, you know, if we're not reincarnated, it'll be fun. We'll do something else. It'll be cool. Yeah.
It'll be a Chris Garneau concert for 24/7.
That is my idea of heaven.
In Kyle's loft.
Yeah.
In Kyle's loft with lots of tarts. And the boyfriend's nowhere to be found. Thank you so much for coming. So what are you going to leave us with? Do you want to do...
I could leave you with... Do you want me to leave you with relief, or do you want me to leave you with...
Let's do relief, since we were talking about that.
Sure.
Can I get a sip of water?
Yeah.
Oh, it's gone anyway.
Do you want some of mine?
No, here.
Okay.
Here, we can take a pause and get you some water if you want
okay.
to.
Okay. Here's some right here, thanks.
You sure? Uh-huh. You don't know where that cup has been.
He's got cooties.
You don't know where my mouth has been.
Ooh. Hey.
Hey, hey.
Oh.
Look, you guys are making me all gross and perverted.
I like that side of you, Chris.
Okay.
So this is relief, where we're going to get some relief. Yeah. Chris Garneau, everyone.
I saw the sea come in. I saw your good old friend. He walked right past. I'll never ask, I'll never ask again. I saw the sea come in. I saw your good old friend. He walked right past. I'll never ask, I'll never ask again. I love the way you dance. We can work it all out. Don't you miss your chance. The pain will all grow out. Your good old word. I heard the things you said. They shuffled in. Asked me to sin in red. I heard your good old word. And I also heard the things you said. They shuffled in. Auf Wiedersehen, auf Wiedersehen, good night. I love the way you dance, we can work it all out. Don't you miss your chance, the pain will all grow out. I didn't go to see the city, I went to see it around you. We could laugh in hell together, the devil will find you too. The sea come in. I saw your good old friend, and he walked right past. I'll never ask, I'll never ask again.